Hello, I'm Sam, and this is Pilgrim Pit Stop. It's a podcast about following Jesus through life's highs and lows. And there's a new episode every other Friday. So I would really love it if you hit subscribe and tell your friends about it as well, if you enjoy what you hear. Here's a little clip of what's coming up today.
I prayed to God. I was like, God, please do something. I don't want to die now. It'd be really great if you just get me some phone signal or someone found me. I don't want to die.
All right, let's go. Hello, welcome to Pilgrim Pit Stop. It's wonderful to have you here. Thank you for choosing to listen. I'm excited to share a conversation that I recorded on the 19th of January 2021 with my friend Barney Lee. If you're wondering why there's some background noise, just going for a walk, part of my daily government permitted exercise in the current lockdown with my brother. But introducing this conversation. Now, Barney is a wonderful guy. He goes to my church, and he is also an incredible adventurer. He loves taking on crazy challenges. And one of those challenges that he has recently taken on, which we talk about at length in this conversation, is to actually walk the entire coastline of Britain. So this is a conversation about that. It's also a conversation about his faith and how that has changed over the years, developed and grown. And also we talk about a medical condition that he lives with and the different ways that that has affected his life. So I really enjoyed chatting to Barney. I hope you enjoy listening. Recording. Well, it's my great pleasure to be joined by Barney Lee. Barney, welcome to the podcast.
Well, hiya. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you here, man. I was just saying before we started recording that you've got a magnificent beard at the moment, and I was wondering if you could just tell the listeners the story behind that, because it kind of leads into what we'll be discussing later today.
It is quite a mighty beard, the biggest beard I've ever grown. Also, the hair is the longest it has ever been. And that's all because when I started my walk around the entire coast of mainland Great Britain, I shaved all my hair off and my beard, and I was bald. And I think if I had to liken myself to anything, it would be like a thumb at that point. So it's quite a contrast, like, I don't know, almost 18 months later or something like that, to have a ridiculous amount of hair and beard. And I'm hoping the plan is to finish the entire walk before I cut off any hair.
Amazing. Well, we'll talk more about the walk in a bit, but I was wondering if we could just start this conversation by talking a bit about your upbringing and your childhood. And I always kind of ask people whether faith was a part of their childhood growing up. So I was wondering if you could share a bit about that and what Christianity looked like as you were growing up.
So I grew up in a Christian household, both my parents Christian, with four older siblings, two brothers, two sisters, all of whom Christian. I went to a Christian primary school that was run by my church. So, I mean, I've said the word Christian many times. So it was all around me growing up, people being spiritual, praying was a part of life, engaging with the Bible, going to church, communicating with people who had similar outlooks and similar views on life. And obviously when you're a child, you know, it's not your own faith. It's not, you just, you grow up and and it's just what's going on. So you just go along with it. You know, they tell you to eat your food, you eat your food. It's not like you're specifically choosing to eat the food, if you know what I'm saying. It's like, it's just happening. And then you make a decision later on that you're going to, well, what does this faith mean? What is this thing that I've been a part of? Do I actually believe it? Is it real? Is it actually my thing or is it their thing? Mm. And yeah, growing up, and I think it was about 13 or 14, you start to get, I don't know, your brain develops a bit and you actually have a thought on something, you know? So when I started to engage and tackle his faith at that age, and speaking to a friend who was a similar age, we were able to discuss some of these bigger questions, like what is God? What is Christianity? What is life? You know, some of these philosophical questions, and actually discover faith to be something new and exciting and something that we ended up discovering together on our own. It wasn't like, it's no longer my parents' faith. It's no longer my siblings' faith. It becomes mine. Mm. And as we were exploring this together, it became quite exciting and we just wanted to learn more and we just saw things and we were getting words for people and we were just felt inspired to lay like hands on people and pray for them and see them healed. It's not all been sunshine and rainbows. It's not been like, oh, this is obvious, you know, this is definitely the way to go. Yeah. It's not as clear cut as that. So as we, it all in the moment, and as we're having this small group and everything seems so clear and so obvious. I mean, getting words, people praying, having insights into people's life, and it being this hunger and just exploring and just knowledge and interaction with God and seeing ourselves being in difficult situations and praying into them and seeing situations resolved and things like that. It's just amazing. The leadership encouraged us to invite loads more people, like an extra five, like double the numbers, but we all didn't quite know what it was. And anyway, it all just kind of dissolved and and fell apart. And then that's where I became a bit disillusioned with faith and I kind of dropped off the radar a bit, but always believing that, I mean, God's the big part of my life, that I still believe there's a God. I believe Jesus died on the cross for my sins. I know that he's there when I need to talk to him. And he helps me in my times of need. And it makes my life so much better in terms of, one, having a community to be a part of, in terms of church that's like-minded. Two, being able to have that person to rely on in them hard times and always comes through. And to, yeah, just to have all that and just to see all the goodness in the world and thank God for that. Cause I look at the world and I'm just like, there can't be any other answer really. There has to be something greater. I mean, you look at nature, you look at the world, you look at inexplainable things and you're just like, there has to be something behind it. And what God is it? What is this greater being? Well, I believe it's the God of Christianity, partly because people I see as wise people, and I rely upon their good judgment that they see this person. It's like, well, if you see it, then there's got to be something about it. And then also seeing that there's two key moments in my life. One is we were at a Christian conference kind of thing, children's camp, and this guy had the gifting of, if people have different size legs or different length fingers, to make them both the same length. And I put my hand up to go to the front, went to the front. Well, actually, it wasn't the hand up thing. I think it was just like, come to the front if you want prayer. So I went to the front, and when I put my fingers together, they weren't quite the same length. And there was a bit of a difference. So you put the base of your hands together, put them together, and the fingers are supposed to be the same length on both fingers, but mine weren't. And this man prayed for me, and I saw in front of my eyes my fingers grow, and I felt it happen, and I can still remember that feeling. And I was like, whoa, okay, this guy's praying in the name of the God of Christianity, and this is happening. That's crazy. And then I saw it happen to another person in terms of, we always knew that they had different length legs, and one of them was longer than the other, and the guy prayed for him, and the one that was shorter actually became the longer leg because he went overboard. And then he was like, do you want to be shorter or taller. And obviously, he wanted to be taller. And it was a measurable difference in between the height. And that was another wow. point at which I go back to them. I'm just like, whoa, it's got to be real.
Bonnie, I was wondering if you could share a little bit about HMPP, and maybe the listeners won't know what that is. So maybe you could just share a little bit about what it is, first of all, and how it affects you.
So HMPP stands for hereditary neuropathy with liability to pressure palsies. Well, that's a lot of big words. And basically what that means is it's a degenerative nerve and muscular condition similar to MS. It causes numbness in the body, paralysis, and muscle weakness. It's degenerative, so it just gets worse over time, and there's currently no cure and no treatment options available. I have that condition myself, and it limits me in different ways. Like, I can grip a pen for about like a few lines on an A4 sheet, and then it cramps up and won't work. And if I push on through, then my hand won't work for the rest of the day or something like that. I've had it at points where... my entire forearm has become the backside of it was numb for about 3 months. I just couldn't feel there. I've woken up in the mornings, my hands have been paralyzed, and my alarm's been going off. And the only way I can describe it is it being like a club, my hand. So I can't twitch it. You use all your might in your mind and your will to try and twitch your fingers, but you can't. So trying to turn off my alarm where I couldn't, I think I actually had to use my nose. Quite funny. And then it went away like after about 30 minutes, and it was like prying, you know, when your hands get really cold and rigid and you can barely move them. It's kind of like that. And then that's me just being able to use them, and then they'll kind of like maybe work over the day. But this is earlier on in my life. So seeing what it's going to probably turn into in the future is quite scary. So that's kind of what the condition is.
And then how does that link to this incredible challenge that you've set for yourself? What was the kind of impetus for that?
It's kind of a long story. I'll sum it up in a bit of a shorter way. So my dream was to do property renovation, buy and sell, do up houses, always the aim of kind of having a semi-passive income so I could do more what I wanted with my life. And to do this, I was like, I need money and I need skills. So I went to become, after sixth form, I went to become a plumber and a landscape gardener. I worked alongside different people, had my own clients as well, and was building that all up, gaining the skills necessary and the deposit to start all this off. So I was doing that. And over the year, I noticed that my body wasn't doing very well. So these episodes of waking up in the morning and my hands not working were becoming more and more frequent. The length of numbness on different parts of my body was becoming worse. Like, so with landscape gardening, shoveling, I'd be able to shovel at the start of the year for an entire day. I'd be all right. But then a few months in, like 10 minutes maybe, then my hands would hurt. Go for another 5-10, I'd be dropping the spade. I literally couldn't hold on to it with all my might. Also, in addition, as well as having this HMPP condition, I also am severely allergic to common plants and metals, which come up in an allergic eczema rash, which I have to take immunosuppressants for to stop that. But that's just another
thing, mate. yeah. It's a lot to deal with.
It's a few things. It's all right. I can get over it. It's good. So that's another reason why doing the landscape gardening was bad, because I was actually allergic to everything I was touching. And also with the plumbing, funnily enough, I only found out the metal thing later on. But yeah. So I was doing all this stuff and I was noticing that my body wasn't doing very well. I got to a point, I was holding a shower screen as someone else was doing the screws in. And I was like, mate, I'm going to drop this in about 30 seconds. And there's nothing I can do about it. I feel my hands giving up and I'm trying, but I need to drop this. So I hooked one of my feet underneath it and like lowered it down as my hands were like crippling and not working. And I was like, yeah, and it came to that point in my head. I was like, I can't do this. Like, this, if this is what's happening after 6 months to a year, what's going to happen after 10 years in the trade? I'm not going to be able to use my body, and I want longevity of it. And so kind of in frustration and stuff at this, I was like, oh, well, what do I do? What do I do? I could go travel the world. I could go do this, do that. And I was like, actually, I want to make a difference. I want to do what I can with my body now, go on an adventure and see if I can change my future and other people's. So I thought, how can you do this? I mean, let's walk from Land's End to John O'Groats. I thought that would be cool. But then I thought, that's a bit too short. It'll only take a few months. And loads of people have done it. What would make mine different, you know? I thought, well, I want it to at least take a year. I know, we're in an island. Like, what if I walked around the coast of it? I was like, has anyone ever done this before? Is anyone this mad? And bear in mind, I'd never walked by myself before anywhere, particularly. I'd done D of E, which is the extent. And we never went on walking holidays or anything like that. So this is all from this. So I was just like, has anyone ever done it before? So I had a look online. A few people have. I was like, who's the youngest person? Because I'm quite young at the moment. And the youngest person was like, started when they were 21, 22. And I was like, I'm 19. Or, yeah, was I 19? Yeah, something like that. I'll have finished it before then. I'll be the youngest person to do it. Well, I've got to do it now. And it's a big thing. People will take notice. If people take notice, people will then know about the condition. And awareness is important for getting anything done. And then if people see it, then people donate money and I can give money towards research to help getting things done. Have a ball along the way, inspire people, test myself, have an adventure. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? And I just went, let's do it. Loads of people told me I was an idiot. Loads of people said, mate, you're going to destroy your body. You might die. What are you even doing? Who does this? And I just kind of, as a thing to myself, a kind of one last hurrah. It's like, well, my body can do it now. It won't be able to do this in the future. Why not do it now? Why not try and make a difference? I don't know my limits. Let's go find them. Yeah. And I just set off and the rest is history.
Where did you start?
So, if you're familiar with the geography of the United Kingdom, I don't know. But around Lincolnshire, so Mablethorpe, which is
very nice,
just north of Skegness. I think Skeggy's a bit well known. About an hour from Lincoln. There's a bit of geography. So I started there on the 10th of August. I don't know. What was the year?
2019 must have been.
Yeah, 2019.
Long time ago.
Yeah, wow. A while ago now. Flipping heck. I was bald, clean shaven, as said at the start. And I just went coast on my left, head south. Eventually I'll get here, but from the other direction. Let's get going. And my send off was my mum, my dad, one of my sisters, her husband, and their child at the time. My dad brought a horn of like a oxen, I don't know, and blew it. Like as I left, and everyone's just about in the tea tray, just turns to see this guy like blowing his horn, like what the heck is going on? And I just walk off, and I just start trudging, and I'm like, "So this is what it is." And I just carried on walking. See on my left, and rest is history.
And you just continue to do that for several months, but then obviously. But around March time, you sort of realised that it wasn't going to be possible to continue it. So what was that moment like where you realised actually this pandemic is gonna stop me in my tracks?
So I'd been going for 225 days at the day I decided to put the walk on pause, walking the majority of them with some rest days. I tried not to take many rest days, but then I ended up collapsing. That's other things. So turns out your body does need to rest. Although you might not want it to, otherwise bad things happen. So it was a big thing at the end. It was very frustrating. It was almost like I failed because I set out to do a thing. I hadn't achieved it. Yes, it was for things beyond my control, but the realities were I did not achieve what I set out to do in the way that I set out to do it, which is just an unfortunate thing, but it's a thing. And it was a big thing to come to terms with. which I only recently have come to terms with. It's taken me this long. It was actually like a few weeks ago that I actually came to terms with it. And that, what month are we in now? January. So that's a long time. Yeah, it was big. There was lots of tears. I was angry. I was sad. I was all the emotions. If I was just north of Glasgow, in fact, I probably would have been able to continue it. But the next few weeks, I was coming into a very heavily populated area, and there was no way around that. And then also, there were so many things. Like, I need my medication of immunosuppressants to be outside without blowing up. I mean, that's a bit of an extreme term. I wouldn't blow up, but just think extensive swollen eczema around your entire body. Heat, hot, not life-threatening, just very irritating, and can swell my eyes shut. So that wouldn't be good walking along the edge of a cliff with my eyes shut, would it?
Wouldn't be ideal, no.
No. So I wouldn't have been able to get the pills to me, and also taking them in a pandemic and not having an immune system is not very good, because get COVID and I die, basically. And actually in the highest category of risk when I take them. That's another fun fact. So there was that, and then my condition in my body was worsening. I was doing damage to my body, long-term damage with the HNPP, and it was a good thing to take the pause, to be honest. Very annoying. Yeah, it was a very conflicting time. I think that's what I'd take away. Very, very conflicting.
I guess before then, there were lots of incredible positives. So I was wondering if you could just share like some of the highlights of the first part of the walk.
Oh, so many things happened. I'm actually writing a book about it at the moment because there's just so many crazy stuff that happened. It's a lot harder to write a book than I thought. But I'm finding my way through it. Ended up walking through a bombing range that had mines in. I didn't realize at the time until I came out the other side, saw the sign behind me and was like, whoa, that happened. I was just like, I was wondering what that fin in the ground was. I didn't die. I saw a Chinook helicopter, the ones with like the L-shaped spouts.
Oh, yeah.
Firing dummy bombs at a target and got invited into a observation tower on the MOD land that I was walking around. So that was fun. ironic, kind of weird. I fell off a cliff at one point into some quicksand on the south coast. And it's weird saying it's a highlight.
Yeah, it's just to clarify, these are your highlights.
it's quite a fond memory, to be honest. It was quite a big thing. I was just like, whoa, I didn't die. That's really cool. So I was going along. I was quite tired, trying to make it to this ferry. I had an hour to get there before it closed. And if I went straight, I could make it. And I was sprinting, jogging, all with a 25 kg rucksack on, maybe 30 kg. It varied in weight, depending on the day and how much I drank and stuff. Going like the clappers. And the flipping coastal path went around this holiday park. And I was like, why? This adds on so much time. So it looked like people had done this coastal path. It kind of like went down this slump cliff and then like went along. It looked quite well trodden. I could see the boot marks. I could see the trail. It wasn't signposted, but you could see there was a trail there. So I went down that, was jogging, and I was like, this is starting to look less and less like a path. I was like, oh, that could probably be the path. That could probably be the path. And then I was like, this is definitely not the path. And I was like, I've gone too far. Just keep on going. And I went and I just slipped on a thing and I went head over heel with my rucksack on down a probably like a 70 degree kind of slope. And then had my legs lodged in like a soup consistency mud. And then started to sink. And then I was like, and I was trying to scramble up what had just come up, and it was all so slippery, like a, I don't know, like a spider in a glass trying to get up, you know, you can't. And I was like, oh.
That's a good description. Put that in the book. Like a spider in a glass.
That's what it was. It was just, and I was just like, oh, like, what have I just done? I don't want to die. So I was like immediately trying to get my leg out, and then I was going deeper in. And no one saw it happen. No one could see it from the beach. No one could see it from the top. No one knew I was there. At this point, I didn't even have a tracker. We sorted that out later on. I had no phone signal. I tried to get my legs out for 20 minutes, exhausting myself and sinking deeper in, and then was just stuck there. I was like, what do I do? This is terrifying. I tried calling people. It just kept not going through. Must have done like 20 missed calls to 3 different people, various texts and things like that, all with hands that were sopping like with mud that was crusting on my hands. I was like the swamp thing kind of thing. Like I was absolutely coated from head to toe in sloppy mud. So even if they were looking down, they probably wouldn't be able to see me as I looked like part of the landscape. And I was there and I just thought, well, I may as well make a video just in case I do die. So I just went and just showed my situation, kind of laughed about it on this video, and was just like, well, this is it, isn't it? And I prayed to God. I was like, God, please do something. I don't want to die now. You know, it'd be really great if you just get me some phone signal or someone found me, because I don't want to die. So I'd given up calling people because it just wasn't coming through. And at that point, I was trying to text some people. My dad called through and was like, before this, I'd been shouting in 3 short bursts and using my whistle and alternating, and my voice was going hoarse and barely working at that point. And my dad called me. He was like, what do you want? Like, you are busy. And then I was like, I don't want to worry you, but I've just fallen off a cliff and I'm stuck in, I say quicksand because it just gets the message across. It was like quick mud, but quicksand paints more of a picture. But I'm stuck in quicksand. And he was like, oh, all right. I said, I've stopped sinking. I'm all right. I just need someone to like chuck a rope down to me. I've just got nothing I can purchase off. And I've gone through all the scenarios of trying to get out and all the different ways of trying to get out of the situation could result in me being in a worse situation and potentially dying sooner. So I don't want that. And he was like, okay. Bear in mind, at this exact moment, this signal came through. All the messages I sent to my mum had got through. So she'd seen about 20, 30 missed calls, and she had 3 text messages from me, which were, I fell off a cliff. I'm stuck in quicksand. I need help. These were the 3 texts that she got. And then she couldn't get through to me. So she thought I was dying. So she immediately called the Coast Guard because she's like, Bobby could be dead in like 2 minutes. So I was fine though. She didn't know that, but I was fine. and then eventually the Coast Guard got to me and I was stuck in the mud for about 3 hours in the end. And they said if I was stuck much longer, the pressure on my legs could have formed a blood clot. And if that went around to my heart, I could die. So there was about... So 30 volunteers that got me out. I felt like such an idiot. There was a crowd of people at the top. And it was flipping heck. And I was shaking. And people were so nice. They wouldn't let me walk anywhere. They got me in like the back of this van and like drove me places like to go have a shower at this campsite and gave me new clothes and stuff to do. And people were just so kind and considerate. And then someone even drove me to where I was staying that night, because obviously I couldn't walk. And then I'd come back in the morning to carry on from the same point. The dreaded cliff. People were just so nice. And they left me and said, by the way, if probably won't happen, but if tonight your leg starts to swell up and you start to have like vibrations in your leg and you get a temperature, just go to A&E. I was like, yeah, why? And they're like, well, you could have a blood clot in your leg. And if it goes around to your heart, you could die. So, and I was like, cool. And then I woke up in the middle of that night with my leg shaking and what I felt like was a temperature. And I was like, oh dear, please no, please no. So I went to go knock at my host door, but didn't even know me. Like, I don't even know half the people I'm staying with. And I was like, I woke them up at like 2 a.m. I was like, sorry, so sorry to wake you. I feel like I've got a temperature and my legs spazzing out. So could you just check if I've got a temperature? Because if I do, could you take me to A&E, please? And they felt my temperature and were just, oh, you feel fine. I was like, cool. I said, well, if I'm not here in the morning, you know why. Night. Yeah, all sorts of things happen. Great, great things.
You must
happen.
Have met some absolute characters on the hike. Because I guess as you introduce yourself, you could basically just say, I'm walking the entire coastline of Britain. And that is an incredible first line of a conversation, isn't it? It instantly, it's intriguing. It's like, what is going on here? Why are you doing that?
Yeah, it's because the classic thing you ask when walking is, oh, where have you come from today? Or how far are you walking? Or something like that. And say they engage with you or I engage with them. And then the polite thing is to ask back. And when they ask me, I'm just like, I should kind of feel bad sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I'm walking the entire coast of mainland Great Britain. And this is day 200. I set off from Mablethorpe 200 days ago. it's been really good. Very interesting people at different points. I just, some of the stories people have, and it's actually quite interesting seeing as you go around the country how open to conversations different people are. So like a Welshman loves a chat, but then like if you go to this, well, this is kind of generalized. I don't want to offend anyone, but like this is just from my experience, this is what's happened. So the southeast, just section of coastline, south of the Wash, all the way around, and also the south coast until you get to like Devon, kind of. People don't really engage in conversation as much. They don't engage. If you can try and engage with them, everyone wants to chat. But they don't want to, it's just you just look down, you don't look. But if you try and engage with them and get them talking, they'll end up talking to you. And it looks like they want to, but it's a lot harder to do that there. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. So, clearly it's been a very physical thing. Have you found it to be a spiritual experience as well?
That moment in the bottom of the cliff being like, I don't want to die, please help me.
That's a big one.
Definite point of connection with God there, and it just came through straight away. As soon as I asked, I received help. And it happened. You could call it coincidence, but I asked and then it happened, kind of thing. Like, I can't see it more clearly than that. There's been people I've met along the way, and I felt led to share faith and things, and ended up praying with random people, and that's happened. And it's been really great to see their take on life and things and their faith. And that's been amazing. And just in the low points, because walking along the edge of the cliff in all weathers, when you got high moods, low moods, you know, low moods in a storm, soaking wet, bitterly cold, headphones stop working, phones stop working, you're wandering along the edge of a cliff. It's not great, you know, when you get them sad thoughts. So just like, you know, talking to God and him pulling me through. And just the provision that I've had along the way has been exceptional. I set off expecting to have to camp like every night, and I only camped like 5 nights, and that was all in the first few weeks. And without even having stuff planned, people just offered, and I ended up having the rest of the nights after the first 2 weeks, all at someone's house or somewhere being put up. People I didn't know. Like, I got somewhere, I just missed the ferry, and I went to this pub. It was so annoying because I needed to camp on the other side. I didn't know what I was going to do. It was like a day to walk all the way around to the nearest bridge. And it was like, what do I do? And I went to a pub to go get a meal. They weren't serving any food. And so someone offered to get me a pint, started talking to me and stuff. And then someone else started talking to me and I explained the situation. So they started like calling around different people and things. And it was really nice. And then some guys just said, I'll sort you out, walked off, came back about 20 minutes later and went, I've booked you in at the hotel just down the road, the bed and breakfast. All on me. That's all good. There you go. And it's just like, whoa, like that's it must have cost him like 70, 80 pounds. It wasn't a cheap hotel. Just for some random guy you just met. Like, just the kindness and generosity of people along the way has been phenomenal. And just seeing provision and things I've just not expected to happen. I mean, I collapsed on one of the days and was lying on the floor for an hour and a half because my body just wouldn't work. And I got to this pub and they let me, well, I bought a meal there and everything. I charged my phone and stuff and started to like revamp my body a bit and asked if there was anywhere I could stay nearby because I really needed to rest. They wouldn't put me up. They wouldn't let me stay in the garden because of policy or some rubbish like that. I don't know. They just didn't want some random homo man staying in their garden. I get them. So I ended up finding this abandoned church not too far away and ended up sleeping in between the pews because it was open. That was really random. There was like a bat in it and some random people visited me in the night. That was a bit creepy, but it's all good. It's all good fun and just provision all along the way, just in the most unexpected times.
Well, I just love hearing your stories. I think it's so brilliant what you're doing. I've got two final questions. So one is, when do you hope to restart the hike? And two is, how can people find out more about what you're doing?
So with the hike, I've come to the conclusion that I can't actually finish it for a few different reasons. So I am going to finish it in a way. I'll get to that. So there's a few things going. So my life's got to progress. It's got to move on. I mean, I can't have this walk hanging over me for the rest of my life. Like, there's got to be a point where you cut it off, because who knows what's happening with coronavirus? Who knows when it's going to actually be okay to do it again, to have help from people, to even go into Scotland? We're not allowed at the moment. So there's so many unknowns. And my life's been on pause almost for 8 months now, or more than that, but since the pause, I don't know how long it's been, more than that. Yeah, it was March the third month. Oh my days. It's been a long time. Getting on for a year. Oh wow. Since, and I can't have that hanging over me. So my date that I would have had to start it to finish it has come and gone. And in terms of my body, it won't be able to handle it with HMPP. I've noticed the damage that's been done. Because with HMPP, if you keep doing a thing and you just keep on going, you don't feel the effects. But if you take a pause, or like a few weeks to fully rest, your body goes, wait a second, you've not given us a chance to actually calculate what you've done to us. And then your body's like, ah, I'm broken. So my hands don't work as much as they used to. My feet don't work, nor do my legs and my arms and things like that. And if I'm to sustain my body for hopefully a long time, I'm hoping, you know, I'll get to a good ripe old age that I'll actually have some use of it. And to go back would limit that completely. And during this time, I found a lovely lady who I am now engaged to. Yeah,
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Big and news.
Yeah, big times, big news. And we're going to be getting married and there's no time to do it before then. And I'm going to be in a house and we're going to university at the end of the year. And I just need to move on with my life, basically. And this is a big part of it. This walk has been a very difficult decision to come to. But the plan is to finish it in a way. So I have not yet completed the entire coast of England. So as I got to just south of Glasgow when I finished, I am now going to backtrack a little bit and start on the border of Scotland and go across from the west coast all the way to the east coast, and then do the remaining bit of England's coastline going south to where I started in Mablethorpe. So it'll be one full circle. That'll take me about a month to finish. And That will be how it is completed. And I'm planning to do that in as soon as I can, really. So it'll either be like April, May, June. It's going to be one of them times, unless it literally is not completely not allowed. And then that's just another thing, isn't it? But yeah, the plan is to do that. I've got other plans to do other expeditions and adventures at other points, all things to be just like looked into. So how people can have a look at what I'm doing, what I'm planning on doing, why I've done the stuff, and random other bits and bobs. I've got a few different ways people can follow. So I've got a Facebook page called My Long Walk Around Britain. And then I've also got an Instagram page called My Long Walk 365. Because I thought it was going to take me a year to start with, but, you know, that didn't happen. but, yeah, so that's it, really, yeah.
Beautiful. Well, Barney, it's like so good to hear from you. And yeah, I think it's just amazing what you're doing. So God bless you, sir. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
It's been a pleasure.
There we go. That was my conversation with Barney Lee, which I recorded on the 19th of January. Great. Well, thanks so much, Barney, for giving me your time. It was great to catch up with you, and yeah, excited for all that's coming your way. Excited for your marriage and yeah, all of the other adventures that you are embarking on. Many thanks, as always, to Johnny Davies for creating the theme music to this podcast, and to Thomas, who I'm currently actually walking with.
You're very welcome.
for the jingles that have been featured in today's episode. If you have enjoyed the podcast, you can actually click a link in the description where you can buy me a coffee. And that is just a fun way for you to show your support for this podcast. I think that's everything. Really appreciate you listening, as always. Stay safe, stay well, and God bless you. Bye-bye.